Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello everyone, Paul Kaminsky here, hijacking the Take It Away feed so I can give you an update on some upcoming episodes. We are working on a multi-part Living in the Material World series, which have all been recorded, but Chris Mercer, the one and only, is working on the editing now as we speak. And in the meantime, wanted to check in to thank everybody for all of the wonderful support so far this season as we've gone into the George Harrison solo albums. And I'd also like to extend a very, very warm thank you to the Take It Away community online, particularly our Facebook group and our growing Instagram handle, takeitaway_complete solo Beatles. Thank you everyone for following us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to participating with you more there. In the meantime, while Living in the Material World is being prepared, we thought we would check in here and also give you a little bonus episode. Now, for those of you who haven't listened to the Yesterday and Today podcast, it is a chronological journey through the Beatles' lives starting in the 60s and onward. Right now, my father, Wayne Kaminsky, is working on, I think, 88, 89, 90 as we speak. So he has gone through all of the solo years that we are currently covering on the Take It Away podcast. Chris and I thought it would be fun to provide a little bit extra bonus content by playing the Yesterday and Today podcast episode that covers the Bangladesh concert, seeing as how we just covered that on the Take It Away podcast. Without further ado, I'm going to throw it to the Yesterday and Today podcast. If you like that show, you know, feel free to go ahead and listen to some more episodes. If you don't like that show, you know, we'll be back next time with more Take It Away goodness. Again, thank you everyone so much for the support, and we'll see you as we continue to journey on through George Harrison's solo catalog. See you later.
The Yesterday and Today podcast is a fan-made, not-for-profit, just-for-fun compilation of chronological source materials as they pertain to the Beatles. The show is in no way affiliated with AppleCorps, nor any organization connected to John, Paul, George, or Ringo in any way, though we do consider ourselves premier members of the Bungalow Bill fan club. So kick back, turn off your mind, relax, and download the stream. We hope you will enjoy the show.
The Beatles, Yesterday and Today. 1971, Episode 50. In this episode, we'll cover July 26th through August 1st.
I realize that I've been in your eyes some kind of fool. Stupid fish, I drank the pool. I've been doing some whining. Now I'm doing some finding. So say you don't mind, and let me off this time. Went clean into a scene where my dreams were getting bad. That's bad. But who rides with the tide, and who's glad with what he has? Been doing some dying, now I'm doing some trying. So say you don't mind, and let me off this time. Do you have life?
Happy with his latest LP that reached number one, Paul McCartney is now keen to put a permanent band together. Drummer Denny Seiwall remembers the call from Paul after the Ram LP's release.
It was a couple of months after the album was out and it was doing well. Paul just called us, you know. We used to just, you know, talk every once in a while. He said, hey, would you and your wife like to just come over to Scotland and hang out a little bit, have a little vacation? I said, yeah, okay. Because that's our slow period, too. The summer months. So I said, yeah, great. We'd go to France and all this stuff. So we went over there and we're at the farm. And all of a sudden he says, you know, I think I'm going to wanna put a band together. Yeah, okay. And I said, Hugh McCracken's over here in Europe. He was touring with Gary Wright at the time. He said, I got Hugh coming up too, so maybe we can just, you know, pick it up and see what we can do. Great, let's go. And so Hugh showed up the next day or whatever, and went up to the farm, and we hung out, you know, did what guys do in those days with the wives and the kids and the dogs and everything. It was really nice. And then the next day, we were asked to come back and leave the wives in town, but just come back for like a serious talk and a rehearsal and stuff like that. And so we did, and that's when he made the proposition that we put something together, and Hugh said, well, I'm going to have to think about that. Hugh was a little bit more involved with the recording scene than I was in New York. I was near the top. He was at the top, I believe, and he was producing. He was doing a lot more. He was more involved than I was, I should say. And his wife was also a model and an actress, so it would have been more of a commitment for him. So they thought it over, talked it over that night and just declined.
McCartney also again discusses having Linda join the band.
We just were talking one night and I said, do you think you can handle being in a band? And Mum just thought about it. So I've never done it before. I said, well, I know, but when the Beatles started, we'd never done it before. And I said, can you imagine? We're standing behind a curtain and the curtain's open and we're in a band and there's all people there. How would you feel about that? You know, they completely freak you, or could you get into it? I think I can get into it. So that was really the basis. We said, right, let's try it. Mm. Let's do it.
When we're singing, fly away. Going winging, cling clinging, sing singing a song to you. When song is sung, tum 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 tum. When day is done, harmony.
I suddenly realized that I didn't actually know how to set up a band. If you think about it, I'd never actually done it before. I joined the Beatles as an already set up affair. So I had to think about how I was going to do it. And to tell you the truth, I didn't have a clue. I decided I didn't really want to get together a super group of established names, which might have been the easiest option. I thought it'd be better to just get hold of some like-minded musicians. It would enable us to grow together.
We had Denny from New York, mm-hmm. Denny Saiwa. And then I wanted kind of another male singer to sing along with. I think because I was so used to it with John. Mm. And so I remember Denny Lane from the Moody Blues. We'd been on tour with them with the Beatles. And I knew he was a good singer, nice guy. So I called him up.
Denny Lane, formerly of the Moody Blues, was working on a successful solo career. But on July 24th, while working on a solo album, Denny receives a call from Paul McCartney.
He gives you the call.
Yeah.
And says, Denny, I'm forming a band.
Do you want to put a band together? That's exactly
literally
what his words were.
And he went, like, yes, right away.
I said, well, I'm in between bands at the
moment.
Is
that what I said? Why would I want to join Paul McCartney?
Something like that.
Is that
something like that.
What was it really? What did you say when he called?
I said, well, I did say that. I said, well, I'm not doing anything else.
So let's do it.
Let's have a laugh. And I went up to Scotland and we did.
And he decided to join. And he came to Scotland and rehearsed with us. So that was it. We started to put together a band.
So on July 25th and the next several days, Paul and Linda hold secret recording sessions in Scotland and at EMI Studios London. Drummer Denny Sywell is asked, how did this quickly formed ensemble deal with suddenly entering the studio?
We went into Abbey Road and just got our sound and said, let's go. And in fact, the track Mumbo, where you hear it start, take it, Tony. You know, we were like, we really had it going on. And the engineer just sitting up there like, and Paul was screaming, take it, you know, hit the button, dude.
Take it, Tony.
Can you hear me?
Paul and Linda were expecting another baby.
Wasn't Mum quite heavily pregnant with Stella during those recordings?
Yeah.
So that sort of whole family thing intertwining throughout, so it's like, right, we're starting up a band, we'll do an album. Mm. And Mum's like out here.
If she'd have wanted to stop, I think we would have just sort of said, yeah, okay.
Pleased with the new band's recording sessions, Paul and Linda decide to take a 3-day getaway in the Mediterranean. But in New York, there's bad news for the couple when they are told, shortly before departure, that Northern Songs Limited of Great Britain and McLenn Music Incorporated of New York are suing the couple for $1,050,000. The suit claims that the McCartneys have violated an exclusive rights agreement for their song Another Day. The lawsuit breakdown is for $50,000 in damages and $1 million in punitive damages, due to the fact that both names, Paul McCartney and Linda McCartney, are claiming writing credit. Due to the current Beatles court case, Northern Songs and McLean Music still claim a monetary freeze on all Lennon, McCartney, Harrison, and Starr writing credits. Paul had used a legal loophole by utilizing Linda as a co-writer and freezing some royalties, or at least from her as co-author.
Well, at the moment, it's all the money I haven't. Because, you know, I have these slight business troubles on, and at the moment, I don't actually receive any money.
Mum had some savings from her photography and stuff in New York. And so we kind of were able to live on that for a while. But it was a silly situation, really, because you knew with the Beatles' success, I did sort of have money. It wasn't like I didn't have it. I just couldn't get at it. It was all frozen, receivership and all this stuff, all these legal things. So luckily, we were living quite simply.
In the lumberyard. We were living in the lumberyard. All that home, we were pulling
back. It was
back
a bit of a tip, wasn't
like...
it? Yeah. I mean, I never remembered that until I saw the whole movie. So it's like, what were we doing?
Money started to sort of flow again.
Meanwhile, back in New York on July 26th, the first rehearsals for George's Concert for Bangladesh begin at the NOLA Studios facility on West 57th Street. Scheduled to appear so far are just George, Klaus Voormann, Ringo.
I told George I was coming when he was putting it together, and I was in Spain, actually, and I remember it very clearly, and... You were sort of backing off from making it a Beatle thing.
Eric Clapton, Billy Preston, Badfinger, and Leon Russell.
Camera one, take our four.
Get a woman I love,
Cut.
George spends hours constantly phoning other musicians, hoping to persuade them to appear in the show.
All these musicians came. Some of them flew thousands of miles, didn't get paid for anything. Dylan, you know, he was really into the whole idea of it for the refugees.
The next day, on July 27th, George, Ravi, and Alan Klein hold a press conference to announce the concert for Bangladesh this Sunday at New York's Madison Square Garden.
Mr. Harrison, with all of the enormous problems in the world, how did you happen to choose this one to do something about?
Because I was asked by a friend if I'd help, you know, that's all. All I'd heard, you know, I mean, up until the time we decided to do the concert, there'd been very little that I'd actually read about it. I'd read little pieces here and there. I'd heard a little bit on television in England. No, it's the same. I mean, it just happens to be East Pakistan now, as far as I can see. It happens to be that which we're doing the benefit for. It's particularly a bad situation there. But, I mean, it does happen all the time. You know, this is happening everywhere, like Biafra was last year. This year, it's East Pakistan. Any war, you know, is bad. And, I don't particularly like the idea of what's going on there, but, you know, that's politics, the political side of it. You know, I think it's bad when anybody should come in and massacre a lot of people, but, I mean, we're really trying to relieve the effect of the massacre. You know, I don't want to get into the cause of it.
My purpose in being here, first of all, is really just to try and raise the money. Ravi came to me and he said if he was to do a concert, maybe play to so many thousand people, but to the size of the problem, the money, the funds that would be made would just be so small. So that's where I came along. I can generate money by doing concerts and by making records. The political side I'm not interested in. There's a war, you know, any war is wrong as far as I can see it. There's a bad situation there. All I'm trying to do is generate enough money and make sure the money is distributed in order to relieve some of the agony. That's all. I'm not interested in the politics.
Would you tell us how the idea for having this benefit performance came about?
Well, the idea was very spontaneous because coming originally from part of the country which is known as Bangladesh, I was very concerned about the whole thing.
Could you speak up, please?
We wanted to do as much as possible in way of contributing, especially to help the displaced people. And I talked with George and he was very sympathetic and it spontaneously came about. And then that's how it is.
George, how much money do you hope to get from this?
Well, it depends, really. Maybe through the concert, we could estimate maybe about how much, maybe 250,000 from the concert. But if we record the concert and film the concert, then maybe that would be a greater way of making the money. You know, a record could possibly sell 1 million, 2 million, if it's good.
Colleen, could you tell us your role and the role of APCO Industries, whatever that is, whatever stands for?
Well,
Can we just put up the money? Yes, exactly what I said. All of the expenses for the concert. The renting of the hall. Bringing the people here. That whole thing. So that it's a concert and a charity where every dime that comes in. The gross money is the money.
You were, Mr. Klein, to suggest how you're going to prevent the kind of thing that had the cops out in force at Shea. Apparently it was so bad at Shea Stadium
I don't
the police
know.
Could not take action.
We're doing all the parents want.
What role with the Beatles in the concert on August 1st? You'll be right out in front. You'll be the number one star. How do you feel about that?
Nervous. I prefer to be a part of a band, but for this, you know, it was just something we had to do in order to get the money. We had to do it quick, so I had to put myself out there and hope I'd get a few fans to come to support me.
Will Ringo be there?
Yeah.
Are there ever times when you wish we were back together again as a group?
Yeah, there are times, but there's times also where we all appreciate not being together as a group.
Why?
Well, should we talk about the concert? Really, this concert is here, you know. I mean, the whole idea of it is to try and help some people. And we're not here really to talk about the Beatles, you know. I mean, it's not maybe incidental, you know, that the Beatles should be mentioned, but it's not really the purpose of being here.
On Wednesday, July 28th, in America, Apple releases a new George Harrison single called Bangladesh. It is produced by George Harrison and Phil Spector.
My friend came to me, sadness in his eyes, told me that he wanted help before his country dies. Save some life. Bangladesh, Bangladesh, where so many people are dying fast. Nature looks like a mess. I never see.
The single did moderately well, but fell short of the airplay and money that everyone thought the song would generate.
The B-side, titled Deep Blue, was written about the death of George's mother last year. On July 30th, former Apple employee Richard DiLio visits George at the Park Lane Hotel in New York and informs him that he is writing a book about the Beatles. He will be calling it The Longest Cocktail Party. George replies, "Well, it's only just the beginning." On July 31st, George, proceeding with the Bangladesh show, happy in the knowledge that Bob Dylan now has agreed to perform later this evening at Madison Square Garden, the final rehearsal for tomorrow's concert takes place.
If not for you, winter would hold no spring. Wouldn't hear a robin sing. Yes, we wouldn't have a clue. If not for you.
And my relationship with Bob is, you know, I just always tried to be straight with him. And, you know, he responded.
Bob would come in and rehearse with the band what songs he was going to do. And so it was really a matter of working it out at the last minute.
The feeling the sky would hold,
rain would gather too. Without your love, I'd be nowhere at all. I'd be lost if not for you. If not for you,
right up until the moment he stepped on the stage, he was not sure he was coming. Because the night before we went to Madison Square Garden, he saw all these cameras and microphones and this huge place, and he was saying, hey man, this isn't my scene. I can't make this. By that time, I'd had so much on my plate trying to get it organized. And I was saying, it's not my scene either. I don't do this every day. In fact, this is the first time I've ever done anything on my own. You at least have been a solo artist for years. So on stage, I had a little list on my guitar, and I had a point where it said, after Here Comes the Sun, it just had a Bob with a question mark. And it got to that point, and I looked around to see if there was any indication if Bob was going to come on or not.
And on August 1st, the Bangladesh concert is held at Madison Square Garden. The program was initiated and prepared by George and Ravi Shankar.
The beauty of that concert was that it was all just so rushed and so spontaneous. And once you get into planning like a tour, or we're going to do this, we're going to do that, loses the appeal.
The concert raises $255,971 for relief in Bangladesh.
I'd just like to say before we start off with the concert that to thank you all for coming here, and as you all know, it's a special benefit concert. We've got a good show lined up, I hope so anyway. First part of the concert is going to be an Indian music section. You're going to hear a sitar and sarod duet, and as you realize, the indie music's a little bit more serious than our music, and I appreciate if you could, thank you. I appreciate if you could try and settle down and get into the indie music section. So let me introduce on sitar Ravi Shankar. And the master of sarod, Ustad Ali Akbar Khan Sarod. I'm sure you all know Ravi's tabla player, Alaraka. And this evening, the drone instrument, the tambura, is being played by Kamala. So I hope you enjoy the concert. Thank you.
Tambura.
Ravi Shankar introduces the evening in a fatherly manner to make everyone aware of the purpose of the concert.
Friends, as George told you just now, they will be participating in the second part. The first part is going to be us playing for you on the Indian instruments, the Indian music. This is a type of music which needs a little concentrated listening. And I would request you to have little patience. I know you are very impatient to hear your favorite stars who would be in the second part. But we are trying to set the music to this special event, this historical program, which is just not a program as usual, but which has a message. And this is to just make you aware of a very serious situation that is happening. We are not trying to make any politics. We are artists. But through our music, we would like you to feel the agony and also the pain and lot of sad happenings in Bangladesh and also the refugees who have come to India. We'll play a dhun, which means an air or a melody, which is based on a folk tune of Bangladesh. And after that, we'll play a gath, a fast gath in teen tal of 16 beats. Now, as usual, I would request you, my friends, to refrain or stop from smoking while the program is on. Thank you very much. God bless you. Thank you. If you appreciate the tuning so much, I hope you'll enjoy the playing more. Thank you.
Important to George was the raga portion of the event, with Ravi Shankar weaving his spell over 20,000 concert goers, sitting cross-legged on stage with his sitar.
You know, Ravi Shankar is a composer. I mean, he's a human. He happened to have spent about 8 to 10 years practicing and becoming the master of an instrument, which once he's mastered is an obscure thing. Then he spent 15 years doing one-night stands. So people, now he's got his audience, but people seem to still only think of him as a sitar player, when actually, you know, he's a fantastic composer.
The concert for Bangladesh was a major feat of organization, which came from Harrison and Shankar. Not just the assembling of all that talent for a non-commercial cause, but the technical aspect, including the excellent recording equipment and procedure, and the fast and frantic rehearsal that pulled the concerts together so tightly to showcase all that solid musicianship.
Oh, need a love in. You don't need no bedtime. You don't need no horoscope for a mic. It's going to see the mess that you're in. You open up your heart. You know what I mean. We've been polluted so long. Now it's a way for you to get clean. Your heart, you see right there. You always are some real people. Believe you of your girls. I chant in the name of the Lord and you'll be free. The Lord is the way my arms awaken and see. Chant in the name of the Lord and you'll be free. The Lord. If you open up your heart, you see what I mean. We've been kept down so long, won't sink in our old dream. Oh, while the poor folks think we want the sanitary water, and the stock exchange is the only thing that's falling back to quarters. But the Lord is away on your own to wait and see. By chanting the name of the Lord and you'll be free.
I'd like to continue with a song from a member of the band, old friend of mine, Billy Preston.
Why can't we be humble, like the good Lord said? Promise to exalt us, but low is the way. How men be so greedy when there's so much left? All things God given, and they all have been blessed. That's the way. Let your heart be troubled. Let mourning, sobbing cease. Learn how to help one another and live in perfect peace. If we all just be humble, like the good Lord said, He promised to exalt us.
Yeah.
The event was a thundering success. Ringo represented the Beatles on stage, since although John and Paul were reportedly asked to join in, they didn't show.
You see, I asked George for the gig. He wouldn't ask me. Which isn't true. I mean, he wanted to ask me, but he didn't know if, you know, he wanted to get me involved in that scene that was going on, you know, because he's my friend. So I said, well, come on, you're putting that group together. Well, where's my place? So he said, oh, will you play? I said, yeah, come on. So that's how I got to Bangladesh.
Introduce you to a few people up here. Everybody here came at very short notice, and some people even cancelled a few gigs to try and make it, and nobody was getting paid for anything. We got on drums Ringo Starr. Also on drums, Jim Keltner. There's somebody on bass who many people have heard about, but they never actually seen him. Klaus Voormann. And you got a whole lot of guitarists. Mr. Jesse Ed Davis. Your friend of mine, Mr. Eric Clapton. And then, thank you. Somebody I'm sure you all know by now, on piano, Leon. Stand up, Leon. I don't know if they're coming through on acoustic guitars, if you're hearing them, but it's and Apple Band Badfinger. And we got a whole lot of singers out there. The singers are all from all different parts of the world and different bands, so let me just give them a big hand. I don't know what's really... And the Hollywood horn players over there, led by Jim Horn. Have we forgotten anybody? I don't know. We've forgotten Billy Preston.
See the love, Thank you. Thank you.
I remember the stage being dark, and I looked around, and here's this guy in a jean jacket walking toward me, and I knew it was him.
He was already, though, he was so nervous, and he had his harmonica on and his guitar in his hand, and he was walking right on the stage. It was like, now or never. And so I just say,
I'd like to bring on a friend of us all, Mr. Bob Dylan. Where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison.
The executioner's face is always well hidden. Where hunger is ugly, where souls are forgotten. Where black is the color and none is the number. And I tell it and think it and speak it and breathe it. Reflect from the mountain so all souls can see it. And I stand on the ocean until I start sinking. But I know my song well before I start singing. And it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a hard rain gonna fall. It's a hard rain gonna fall.
Thank you. touch is true like ice or fire. People carry roses, make promises by the hour. My love, she laughs like the flowers Valentine's came by her. In the dime stores and bus stations, people talk over situations, read books and repeat quotations, the conclusions on the wall. Some speak of the future, my love, she speaks softly, knows there's no success like failure, and if failure's no success at all. The cloak and dagger dangle, madams light the candle, in ceremonies of the horsemen, even a pawn must hold a grudge. Statues made of matchsticks crumble into one another. My love weeks, she doesn't bother, she knows not to argue or to judge. Perfection, expecting all the gifts that wise men bring. The wind howls like a hammer, the night blows cold and rainy. My love, she's like some raven at my window with a broken wing.
very much. Then.
Such distress, I won't do it later.
Leon Russell, Eric Clapton, Billy Preston, and the folkmaster Bob Dylan all had their magic moments with the crowd. Dylan especially, since his appearance was a well-kept secret until just before he ambled onto the platform.
The short planned concert is over for George. George is both relieved and energized. He is inspired to write a song called The Day the World Gets Round. And on August 2nd, George and Phil Spector begin a week of all-night sessions on the Bangladesh album.
Coming up in a moment, John Lennon imagines a successful album.
My album, Imagine, is, inverted commas, a revolutionary, peaceful album. It has the same message on that I said in Give Peace a Chance. It has the same message as my last album on, just done in different ways.
Yes.
So we're still for peace, all right.
Paul responds to John.
When someone like John Lennon says your music, yeah, it was very hurtful. But one thing I knew about John was that he shut his mouth off very often about things. So that there was a point that, you know, when he deliberately wanted to say crummy things about me.
Why?
He was hurt. He later explained it by saying that I'd kind of hurt him over some things, and it was kind of bitchy.
Next on
Yesterday and Today.
For more information or to contact the show, visit yesterdayandtodaypodcast.wordpress.com or email at yesterdayandtodaypodcast@gmail.com. Also visit @yesterdaypod on Twitter and search Yesterday and Today Podcast on Facebook. See you next time!